violation of the Establishment Clause of the Constitution of the United States of America, saying that our country cannot favor nor discriminate against any one religion over the other. And this is why we call it a Muslim ban, because in the executive order, it was saying that no one could come from these seven predominantly Muslim countries except for religious minorities, meaning Christians. And this is what Donald Trump said openly on Christian Broadcast Network, and he's so silly, this is actually being used against him in court. He said it like it's when these people make these public statements, it can be used against them in court. He said this as president, not even just on the campaign trail. There's also a challenge regarding the free exercise clause of people not being able to freely practice their religion or having fears of that who came here, who are plaintiffs, including one sheikh in our area who I know personally, who is an immigrant from Syria that we know in a an upright, decent man. And then we also have a Fifth Amendment claim in there as well, okay, in the CARE lawsuit. Now, since then, there's been two other lawsuits that were filed in which judges also gave temporary injunctions. One was filed here in the Eastern District Court in Michigan, filed by attorney Nabi Ayad with the Arab American Civil Rights League. He filed one after the others, and a judge upheld that. And then the one that was just a decision was given in the state of Washington. So we have seven federal judges already that have given temporary injunctions, and that came from different, there were different political appointees. Some of them were Obama appointees, but actually not all of them, Bush appointees too. So basically it was liberal judges and conservative judges both found, at least on the surface, enough reason to believe that there were some constitutional violations to give temporary injunctions until more briefs are filed on both sides and there is a longer case, and this is going to take years to be adjudicated in court. That's how these cases work, and it may not even be settled until Trump is running again for president, if he makes it that long before impeachment. We don't know. Wallahu a'lam. Allah knows best. Allah knows best.
So what does that mean? That if this takes that long, does that mean that his executive order is not effective anymore? Or?
Well, I'll get to that later. Q&A. Just hold on right there. Keep that question in mind. Just save it. So, and please hold all questions to the end. Please make notes and you can ask your questions. We're not going to be very long, and we also have in the audience one of our good brothers in the community, Sayyid Mustafa, who's an immigration attorney, who I see in the audience, who may also be able to help with some questions as well. But now, so this is the background, due to that, the Washington order, now the Department of Homeland Security, in which Customs Border Protection is a part of, those people that ask us the questions coming to the country from the border, land crossing, like with the bridge, as well as flying, they've been given directives to let people into countries that have valid visas from those seven countries. And also there were 100,000 visas that were basically temporary revoked, and the State Department from those seven countries. And U.S. State Department has now said that those 100,000 visas are now, as of right now, they are legit. They are legitimate for people to come into the country. Now, some advice that I'm going to give regarding this, and then I'm going to give you like some tough brotherly advice regarding talking about this to fellow Americans, okay? Because I see some mistakes being made, and we have to understand, or at least I feel like giving you some nasiha about really the time that we're in right now, and how we need to be careful of not falling into traps or sectarianism at this time in particular, because this will not be beneficial for any Muslim, irrespective of your madhab. And I know that you know, that basically everyone in here, except for maybe three of us, are followers of Madhab Ja'fari. So this is very important to understand. So the first thing is that if you have relatives or friends that have visas and they were coming here and they got stopped, or they were planning on coming here, but they decide not to come because of the ban, that we strongly encourage those people who have valid visas to expedite their trips as soon as possible and come to America as soon as possible. Don't delay. If you have family members in Iran and they have valid visas, they should come here as soon as possible. They should not delay, because this situation is so fluid. We don't know if those visas at the end of February or going to March will even be accepted, right? Because the first filings for the temporary injunction, they were waiting until the end of March for the other civil rights organizations to actually submit briefs. But things are so fluid right now that we actually don't know for sure what may happen. You should have your family members or friends come here as soon as possible. This is the first piece of advice. The second piece of advice is that their tickets should be booked on a U.S. or American-based airline, or if not, at least a Western-based one, like a Lufthansa, like a German-based one, to come to the United States, and not to use one of the Arab airlines. Now, why do I say that? Well, Kuwait, first of all, just instituted a Trump-style ban in which they ban other Muslims from coming to their country, except they add on a couple of more countries. They added on Pakistan and Afghanistan. But Syria is on there, Iraq is on there, Iran is on there, you know, where they, you know, they can't come to Kuwait. Now, Saudi Airlines issued a statement saying that they will not allow boarding of anyone flying to the United States of America from any one of those seven countries. That's still up on their website right now, and it was reported in the Arab News. Okay, so Saudi is not allowing anyone. The Emirates is not allowing anyone to fly from their airlines to the United States of America from one of those seven countries. Okay, we also know of people being harassed by Royal Jordanian Airline. Okay, so this is why we're seeing that. Actually, if you look at the statements of the airline companies, actually the American airline companies have actually been more sympathetic to the Muslims than the Khaliji airlines. La hawla la quwwata illa billah. But then again, that shouldn't like surprise us, right? Especially with the Emirates, because they're playing one of the dirtiest games in the Arab world right now. So that's a second piece of advice. The third piece of advice is for all of you, whether you are you have green cards, permanent legal resident. Whether you are a citizen, be it natural born like myself and Sheikh Usama, or if you are a naturalized citizen, is that when you leave this country and you come back, you may be stopped and asked questions at the border by CBP. And there are certain questions that you should answer, and there are certain questions that are inappropriate. How much money you are bringing back is an appropriate question for them to ask. So as I think most of us know, we cannot come back in the country with $10,000 or more dollars, right? Back into the country. And that means per family, right? That doesn't mean that you can stick $2,000 in your son Bilal's backpack and then you give wifey $6,000 and then you have $5,000. They're gonna bring you in, and they're gonna add all that money up, and they're gonna seize your money, right? It's per family. It's not per person. So they can ask you, how much money do you have? Did you travel for business reasons? Were you a tourist? Were you going to visit family? You know, vacation? What was the nature of your business? You know, where did you travel to? You have to answer these questions. Are you bringing back any food particular food products or flowers or something like that, right? Are you bringing that, like, they can ask you if you're bringing back, like, any, like, fruits, you know, and vegetables and things like that. They can ask you things like that. This is perfectly acceptable. What they should not be asking you is, do you pray? How many times a day do you pray? In other words, they're not supposed to be asking you questions about religious beliefs or practices. What masjid do you go to? Who's your sheikh? Are you Sunni or are you Shi'i? And your politics, do you like Houthiin or you don't like Houthiin? Do you like Trump? And this is a question, like, literally there's some people were asked questions recently if they like President Trump. Like, these are inappropriate questions by the Customs Border Protection. They are actually being asked right now, and they were asked under Obama. That's why there's a CARE has a federal lawsuit against DHS and the FBI for this line of questioning under Barack Hussein Obama. Things have just, we've seen a spike again, as it had calmed down for a while right after the election. Literally the same day, we start seeing a spike in these complaints, not just to our organization, but others, ADC, ACLU, other civil rights organizations, not just CARE. So you can politely decline answering those questions regarding to your religious practice and your religious beliefs. Because really what is going on in this line of questions is basically treating religious practice and as a potential predicate for national security threat or criminal activity. Like, whether you fast Ramadan or not should not be a question for national security threat, or whether you pray or how many times a day do you pray. And we all know too that most of these, alhamdulillah, our country hasn't had a lot of so-called homegrown extremists, but we know that most of them that did get into this, most of them were irreligious. Some of them got arrested for soliciting prostitutes, and they were drinking and all types of stuff. They weren't like, you know, they didn't have a lihya down here, and, you know, they weren't walking around wearing thobe, and, you know, they weren't coming to Fajr or Salat al-Subh every morning at the masjid. Like, they were like, it wasn't these types of guys and gals, right? So now, that's some specific advice relating to this, relating directly now as a talking point. And, you know, pardon me if this sounds a little bitter in saying this, but قل الحق وإن كان مرًا. This is a famous saying, right? It's like you have to speak what's right, even if it, you know, it's a little bitter, right? So I've seen some Muslims as a talking point, they're saying, well, you know, these countries they got put on, no one committed a terrorist attack from Iran on the United States of America, and, you know, the Saudis were involved in 9/11, you know, so how come Saudi Arabia is on the list? This is a bad talking point. This is a bad talking point. Number one, the alt-right and white supremacists don't make any distinction between a Sunni or Shi'i because they hate all people of color, especially Muslims. That talking point doesn't work. Number two, whether you believe, I mean, that's a separate question about whether you believe three towers fell with two airplanes hitting them. That's for another discussion, right? That's for another discussion. But let's say 100% of us believe that there were Saudis that were involved in that bombing. Do you want to throw every Saudi citizen underneath the bus who come to the United States of America? There's a lot of good people in Saudi Arabia. And even from your madhab, you know, if you go to Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, there's actually a market set up there now for the followers of Madhab Jafari. Do you know there's about 1,200 Saudi students that attend Western Michigan University? Do you know that about 400 of them follow your madhab? Do you want them to get their visas banned when they did absolutely nothing wrong? As if to criminalize every single person who's a citizen of Saudi. And, like, no one gets Saudi citizenship by applying, by the way. It's through Qadr, or we can say accident of birth, that they were born underneath that British created kingdom. So let's not fall into the same framework of the Islamophobes. The Islamophobes want to paint all Muslims with a broad brush as if they're all wrong. They say, why not take off this country, take off Syria and Iran, and put Saudi Arabia on the list? No, that's a bad point. People who should be allowed or come into this country should be vetted on an individual basis for who they are, upon their criminal record, and on the content of who they are, not because of their national origin, jinsia, or something that they had absolutely no control over. I think this is a bad talking point. And I actually saw one of our shuyukh get on national TV using this talking point. This is a horrible talking point. And throw all the Saudi people underneath the bus. This is my belief. I think it's wrong. لا يؤمن أحدكم حتى يحب لأخيه ما يحب لنفسه من الخير من أقوال النبي عليه السلام. Right? None of you is a real believer until you love for your brother or your sister in humanity what you love for yourselves. That's from good. Right? If you don't want to be painted with a broad brush, don't paint. Now, if you want to say the Saudi government, that's a different thing. Like, I don't like the Saudi government. I like the Emirati government. I like the Egyptian government. Like, there's not too many Muslim governments I have respect for. You know, Assisi is one of the worst. La hawla wa quwwata illa billah. He's horrible. Right? There's many horrible ones, right? But the people and the governments are different. I mean, good God, it's like, do you want the entire world to judge you as American citizens by Donald Trump and Steve Bannon and Flynn, who is a white supremacist who heads the NSA right now, who said Islam is a cancer that should be eradicated? Like, that's who's in the cabinet of Donald Trump. A straight up Jeff Sessions is about to go to be a confirmation for attorney general, a white supremacist. Like, we have straight up Klan going into the White House. Straight up and down. Like, they're not even hiding anymore. Like, straight wolves. But sometimes a wolf is, like Malcolm X said, a wolf is good. Maybe these wolves will wake us up that we live under a system of white supremacy. And that we will organize to do something for ourselves and work with other communities of color and good white people to dismantle this racist system. That's always been racist. This is nothing new. People talking about, this is so un-American. This is anti-American. What America have you been in? What American history do you know? This country that has always had various immigration acts and executive orders to stop refugees and immigrants. The Chinese Exclusion Act. The Immigration Act of 1924 that blocked immigration from most of the Muslim world for 41 years. And Eastern European Jews, because, you know, Jewish people didn't get somewhat white until about 50 some years ago. They weren't socially politically white in America. Not long ago. When our country in 1939 blocked Jewish refugees fleeing Nazi Germany and sent them back, and they ended up in concentration camps. Like, America has a long history of doing this. Like, this is nothing new to all. This is un-American. I saw someone on TV say not long ago, this isn't the America I know. If you're African American, this is the America that you've always known. You know, you should listen to Sheikh. I know, mashallah, may Allah reward you, Sheikh Usama. You should pay attention to Sheikh and what he's talking about, because he's given tafsir Quran and talks about Sirah, but he's infusing in the black experience in that tafsir. It's important. It's important. If you want to understand how to operate in this country. Now, I want to mention one other thing that's coming, because I was mentioning this briefly to Sheikh Osama, and then I'll avail myself for questions and answers. There's more executive orders to come to affect communities of color. Right? Like, Trump talked about sending in the National Guard into Southside Chicago. Chicago is just symbolic of black urban communities. When he says Chicago, that means black people. Like, he's not going to be sending the National Guard around to where DePaul University is. He didn't mean that part of Chicago. He's talking about around Southside Chicago is, where Masjid Fateh is and the Naqshbandi brothers, where Farrakhan stays at. He's talking about around there. That's what he's talking about. These code words, your phone is ringing, brother. These code words and some of the blatant things that President Trump said, Senator Ted Cruz and some of his advisors have said that they're going to make the Muslim Brotherhood and so-called affiliates, they're going to designate them as a terrorist organization, the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, most of you might say, oh, well, I'm from the Shia, and Muslim Brotherhood is Sunni, and you know, I don't like all what the Brotherhood has done. What does that have to do with me? Yeah, put them on the list. How's that going to affect me? Let me explain to you what that is. The Muslim Brotherhood has become a code word or a boogeyman for Muslims, period. It will be used as foreign and domestically in two ways. It will has the potential to be used to further block Muslim immigration and for people to get visas to the United States of America. Because if people come from certain countries and they say Ikhwan al-Muslimin operates in that area, then they can say, oh, we're going to block people coming in from these countries in which there's a strong Ikhwan presence, or they can scale it back on an individual level. Oh, we think that you prayed at a mosque, or someone in your family, or your cousin, your distant relative, someone in your village was part of Ikhwan or shares your same last name, and will use that as a reason to block one of your family members or friends from coming to the United States of America. Even for something as like getting health care, getting an operation they need. So it affects people whether they're a part of the Muslim American Society or any of these other organizations or not, right? Ikhwan, the designation of Ikhwan, will be used as a means of further blocking Muslim immigration and Muslims getting visa from Muslim countries, whether from Lebanon, Egypt, we can go on down the list of the countries, Tunis, it'll be used. What is the second thing? The second threat is that whole loose thing of affiliates, right? This whole loose thing of affiliates will be used as a means to try to shut down many national Muslim organizations and can be used as a pretext to close down masajid and Islamic schools. Now you might say, well, how could they close down Islamic schools or masajid? Obama did it. The Alevi Foundation, they did it. They designated the Alevi Foundation as being connected to the Iranian government, but nowadays seized property in uptown Manhattan. There were Islamic centers, Maryland, Texas, which were designated as being part of the Alevi Foundation, right? And they were going through legal proceedings. That same type of thing could take place here, where one out of five masajid could face having their funds frozen by Treasury Department, go into seizure, the actual properties, and several Islamic schools around the country, including the state of Michigan, could be closed down. This is serious business. This is serious business. So we need to know and need to understand what's going on. Now, how can we deal with this? And then I'll take some of your questions specific to this issue. We're not dealing with, again, school bullying, workplace discrimination. Not dealing with that today. Dealing specifically with this issue. What can we do? The first thing is, and I'm going to say this shamelessly, is that you should be supporting your community-based organizations such as CARE that are filing legal action on behalf of this community to help protect our community's civil liberties and civil rights. We appreciate your ajankum Allah, jazakallahu khairan. We appreciate your dua. All that is appreciated. Jazakallahu khairan is not going to pay these hundreds of thousands of dollars of legal expenses, right? In which we are up against an administration that has basically unlimited coffers to defend their messed up executive orders. Because they're using our tax dollars to defend themselves against unconstitutional orders. We have limited resources. In fact, last year, I found out through some research, may Allah preserve National Executive Director Nihad Awad, met with some Muslim leaders and said that 90% of the money that American Muslims raise goes to relief and development efforts overseas. They give khums money, goes overseas. Al-Mabarat, Islamic Relief, it helps Syrian refugees and people in Kashmir and Burma, Yemen. MashaAllah, alhamdulillah, that's good. We need more parity in taking our money and investing in our organizations here, especially that are defending our rights and as well as involved in clarifying misinformation about Muslims and Islam. This should be a priority for our community. Because how can we help Muslims abroad if we get in a position where we can't even help and defend ourselves? Like, it doesn't even make sense. It's illogical. Like, it's a saying, charity starts at home. Even if you fly in an airplane, what does the airline attendant tell you, sisters, if you're traveling with children? When the oxygen mask drops down, you're supposed to give you're supposed to give oxygen to yourself first before you give it to your children. You give yourself the oxygen mask first. You have to do something to help yourself first, and then you can attend and make sure the rest of your children get oxygen. You give one of your children oxygen, and then you fall out, then what happens to your children? Then your one child that has on panics and wants to help you, and then they end up passing out, and then your other children, like, you have to help yourself. So one is that we need to be investing in our own organization. And it's not just CARE, right? Even if you want to talk to a secular organization like ADC, right? Or Arab American Civil Rights League, or what is it? ACRL. I'm messing up the acronym, but you all know what I'm talking about. Donate to your community-based organizations, be it CARE, ADC, donate. But especially to those who are involved in the legal actual litigation. Right? That's number one. Number two, and you've heard me say this before, and I've said the last 2 years at CARE Michigan's banquet, is that justice can't be just us. If we think as Muslims that we're less than 2% of the population, if we think that we alone are going to be able to get ourselves out of this Islamophobic and alt-right, white supremacist supported regime, or you can say government in Washington, D.C., if you think that we can do it all on our own, Janoon. It's insane. It's insanity. There are a list of other groups of people right now who are going through what we're going through and even worse. Right? Have what African Americans have always gone through, Muslim or not. The Latino community, Muslim or not. Various communities have gone through things. And if we are actually putting forth some time and effort to just sit with other people, see what their concerns are, see if we can help them. There's going to be some benefit from this community. But we should not be doing it quid pro quo, that we're just going to people just because, hoping that they're going to scratch our back. We should have ikhlas. We should have sincerity. We should go to people and help people because we know it's pleasurable to Allah Azza wa Jal, and that's what Deen al-Islam taught us, and this is the way of Habibullah Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. That's why we do it. And when we do it, inshallah, Allah is going to come and He's going to help us. And Allah Azza wa Jal can send to us unseen forces. Forces that we can't even think of that can come to our aid. وَإِنْ يَسُوكُمُ اللَّهُ فَلَا غَالِبَ لَكُمْ. Allah Azza wa Jal says in the Quran, you know, if Allah helps you, then really, you know, can anyone defeat you? Who can defeat you? Look at Ghazwa Badr. What area code are you in right now? What's this area code of Dearborn? 313. Nabi Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam had 313 companions at Ghazwa Badr. He had 313 companions at the Battle of Badr, where those people were outnumbered. You know, a lot of those companions didn't even have swords to fight with. Quraysh had all the camels, all the horses. They all had all the bows and arrows. They had all those swords. What happened to Quraysh? Allah Azza wa Jal sit down, Jibril alayhi salam, Mikael alayhi salam, Malaika alayhi salam. And those people were turned back. Right? Like, we believe that happened, right? So we have to be faithful to our deen. And if we are doing, as Rasulullah alayhi salam said, khayrun nas man yanfa'u an-nas, the best of the people is he who benefits, brings he or she brings continuous benefit to people. When we're out there benefiting people, there'll be people who come and stand up for us. More people. Not only that, there'll be people that'll come and accept Islam. You know, right now, Muslims actually, we're actually getting some sympathy right now. Really, we haven't even gotten any, we haven't even had any sympathy since al-Marhum Muhammad Ali, since he passed, because the day after he got buried, then the terrorist attack came. But for a whole week, the United States of America on national TV was showing sympathy to a great American who was a Muslim. For an entire week, subhanAllah, national TV coverage showing Sheikh Zayed Shaker doing the janazah was shown on CNN Live. SubhanAllah, we actually have some sympathy now. We need to go out and do something for people and show people what this deen is really about, which means we have to get out of this cocoon called Dearborn, Michigan. I know it's very comfortable here. I know all the Arabic stores are here, you know, in Menakish, and you know, you can get all the stuff that you want right here, you know. You have to get out of this place. Do you know, we are less than a half a mile away from the poorest major city in the United States of America. We're less than half a mile away to the poorest major city in the United States of America, with all these resources and wealth that we have, and we are that close. What are we doing for the people of Detroit? What are we doing? Now, that's long term. That's something we need to stay committed to, no matter what happens to Trump. But this, as I said the other night, this problem didn't start overnight, and it's not going to end overnight. There's been a long time of this building up in the United States of America. And by the way, those seven countries that Donald Trump banned, these were countries of interest, or so-called threatening countries, that were designated by President Barack Hussein Obama. And that's the defense that the Republicans are using. Oh, well, he's just putting a ban on the countries that Obama said were problematic. This stuff didn't happen overnight. The stuff with this, the CBP and ICE raids and harassment by the FBI, like, that stuff just didn't happen 2 weeks ago. right? The anti-Muslim sentiment in America, the alt-right, like, oh, white supremacists just didn't pop out of anywhere. They were just on the DL. They were chilling. They were always around, the white supremacists. You know, this became more emboldened. They're always around. White supremacists never left. White supremacists have always been in the government of the United States of America. So with that, I will stop right here and take any questions. And again, I said also that we have our brother in the audience, Sayyid Mustafa. If there's any immigration directly related questions regarding to green card holders or permanent legal residents, people have different types of visas, things of that nature, then I will, with the organizer's permission, I will just cede that question to him.
Inshallah. But, Hassan Tajarabun Allah, Brother Dawood. So we can just start off with these questions and we can kind of scope it out to see if there's any other ones. So the first one says, you mentioned politely declining the questioning if they're asking abnormal questions. Can you give an example of how one should reply? If one has not experienced this, they might feel intimidated. Can one ask for a lawyer? What steps can you take? An example would be like if someone asks if they would be a security threat, like if they've ever done anything, like what kind of questions should they be answering?
Okay, so that's good. I'm glad someone misheard what I said, or maybe I misstated it. Those regular questions, you should answer them. You shouldn't decline them, okay? Even with those religious questions that they ask you and you decline them, just know that when you decline them, you could be held longer. I mean, just know that you could be held longer, right? So, and we have cases in our office where people are held up to 13 hours, you know? So you can be held, okay? And, you know, even if you decline answering those questions, they can sit back and they can hold you for a while. Now, when you get into one of those back rooms and you say, oh, well, I want to make a phone call and talk to my lawyer, this is a murky area, right? Because first of all, CBP, in most cases, they're not going to let you use the phone and call your attorney, especially if they've seized your phone from you, which is another thing I should have mentioned too, right? When you are coming back into the country, and you know this happened to Sheikh Ilahi years ago, they can ask to search your laptop and your cell phone. Okay, so you say, you don't want to open up your passcode for them to see it, or your phone. They can take your laptop. They can download all your stuff on it anyway, right? They can seize your property. They can seize your phone, and they can hold your phone. Then you have to go through paperwork to get your phone back. Okay? So they can seize your stuff, but you're not guaranteed to get a call to call any attorney when you're being held in the back of a CBP office. So understand that when you decline to answer like any of those like religious or political questions, that you still may be held for a while before you're let go. But if you are a citizen, they cannot deny you entry into the country. They can't say, oh, well, you didn't answer our questions, so we're going to put you back on a plane on British Airways and you have to fly back to the UK. Like it doesn't work that way. Also, let me also say this is two other pieces of advice. Sometimes people have personal pictures on their laptops or on their cell phones. Brothers, you might have a picture of your wife who normally wears hijab, but you have a picture of your wife or your daughters. They don't have hijab on a picture. So on your phone, you think it's normally under, you have your passcode is normally private. Or on your laptop, you know, you have some pictures of your mother, you know, without hijab, or like all of your female siblings or whatever, right? We suggest that if you don't want any other men looking at those, that you should take all those pictures off and put them like on a thumb drive or something like that and leave them at home and do not travel out of the country with those pictures on your laptop or your cell phone. Least those pictures will probably get and be looked at by men who are a man who's not a mahram, right? So that's a precaution that you should take. Also, and I mentioned this before, I was at Meshit Dix earlier today, and I say Mustafa was there with me too, and I mentioned this, that if your laptop is taken or your cell phone, practically speaking, you should just say khalas. I mean, you can get it back, but practically speaking, you should say khalas as far as using it, because once the government gets your phone or laptop, you know they can put like a virus or a worm on it, right? They give it back to you, and everything that you like type on your phone, they're intercepting it real time. And I mentioned this before, and it's true, to the point that if you're texting someone and you like erase letters or erase the text before you send it, they literally can see you typing and erasing letters. I'm not exaggerating. So in that type of case or situation, you might, well, subhanAllah, I guess I'll get my iPhone back and take the stuff off and try to sell it on Amazon.com or something. I don't know, whatever you want to sell it at. But that's a phone or laptop you really don't even want to use anymore, because it's probably a strong chance that it could have been infected with some sort of government worm or virus. Wallahu a'lam.
The next one says, I read in some online forum that all green card holders and are mandatory by law to carry their cards in person at all times. It also says that failure to carry is a misdemeanor with fines up to 130 days in prison. Is it true, and what actually are chances of someone being punished for not carrying a green card, and what's your advice on that?
Sayyid Mustafa. It's his specialty. Please come up. You can grab one of those chairs right there. That's good, because, no, you're fine, keep your shoes on. Because on that one, I was going to say you need to contact an immigration attorney about that, because I'm not sure about that answer.
Okay. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على أشرف المرسلين سيدنا محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين. اللهم طهر قلوبنا من النفاق وأعمالنا من الرياء وأموالنا من الربا وألسنتنا من الكذب وعيننا من الخيانة إنك تعلم خائنة الأعين وما تخفي الصدور. To answer this question, of course, we're just like brother Daud Walid said just now, we were at Dix, and the same advice we gave, that each and every, first of all, let me back off. Each U.S. citizen has to get a passport card. It costs you like $30. You don't have to carry a passport. Just in case, you have to get the passport card. It's like a driver license. That's the only proof we can carry all the time to prove that we are U.S. citizens. That's number one. Number two, the green card holders, or what we know as LPRs, carry your original green card. This is a passport card. You can travel to Canada, you can travel to Mexico by sea and by land, not by air. And it's a very important document. Unless you have the enhanced driver's license, which is okay, you should get the passport card. Like I said, it's $30 only. Green card holders, they must carry their original green cards. It's not a misdemeanor, but if you're pulled over and you're asked, and this is a criminal law, which I do practice criminal law as well, if the police officer pulls you over for traffic violations, he has a right to ask you about your legal status. If there is no pullover, he cannot ask you about your legal status. So do not give them the chance or the opportunity to ask you about your legal status. So my advice is, it's not a misdemeanor. I have never heard that it's a misdemeanor. Maybe I'm wrong, but you should not make a copy and carry your green card. Carry the original green card, the physical green card.
Okay, so the next question says, if somebody's an American-born citizen, they decide to travel to one of the countries on the list, should they expect to be additionally screened, and what are their rights? I think Brother Dawood spoke a little bit about that.
I think I touched on it already, but under these days and times, if you travel to one of those countries on the list, that it's safe to say, especially Iran and Sudan, in which our country doesn't have full diplomatic relations to begin with, and both are countries that are designated as state sponsors of terrorism, according to the U.S. State Department. Sudan and Iran are both designated. This was prior to Trump. If you go to Sudan or Iran in particular, it is safe to say that coming back, you should probably expect to get some secondary questioning. And again, I stated about those things that they ask that you should answer. You're obligated to answer regarding where you travel, the reason why, you know, how much money do you have, you bringing back perishable items, etc. But when it comes to your, you know, whether you like Trump or not, or whether you like Omar al-Bashir, or Khamenei, or, you know, these types of things, then those are the things you're not obligated to
I just want to add about to what Brother Dawood said before about, if you are a U.S. citizen, they cannot deny you admission. If you are a permanent resident, they cannot deny you admission either. Even if you overstay outside the United States, if you stay in whatever country you were in for over a year, when you come back, never ever sign that form I-407. You are abandoning your green card without knowing it. Mm-hmm. They will tell you, we're going to take you to court. Take me to court. You're going to pay a fine of $595 at the airport. They will let you in. They never take you to court. They're so swamped, they will never take you to court. So do not make that mistake. Or for this matter, do not sign any documents before you consult with a lawyer or someone whom you trust. Doesn't have to be a lawyer. And I'm not soliciting business again.
So this one says, if somebody, I guess, is in the last step of the immigration process and they have a visa interview in Canada, is this something that they should attend to? Or they should go in?
Yes, of course they should. I don't see any problem where they, for what purpose, what kind of visa are we talking about? Doesn't say. I mean, there is no restrictions that I know of about attending, you know, or getting a visa from Canada or any other country now, since the Judge Raboot, I think his name was, James Raboot, from the Western District of Washington State, he blocked the, the executive order in its totality, nationwide. So things are now where they were before January 27th of 2017.
I think question in terms of the, when we're talking to other people, I guess, about the ban, how can we approach maybe American citizens and kind of discussing maybe having some outreach or that type of thing. Like, what kind of things should we say to them? What kind of discourse should we have with our fellow American citizens?
Well, that depends on, we take that by a case-by-case basis, right? So, like, there are different points that resonate with different Americans based upon their ethnicity or racial group, as well as their social political background. Certain examples you would talk about to someone in Southfield, Michigan, that's African American, would be different than maybe certain things that would concern people in Taylor, Michigan, who are white American, right? So you have to take that on a case-by-case basis. I would say, though, that First of all, don't get into debates with people who seem like or are openly being hostile or showing animus to Muslims or Islam. Don't waste your time, right? We have I had a Quran about this, the Surah Al-Ahraf, the 199th ayah, right? خُذُوا الْعَفْوَ وَعْبُوا بِالْعُرْفِ وَعَدْرُدْ الْجَاهِلِينَ. Right? عَدْرُدْ الْجَاهِلِينَ is the operative part, right? You take the pardoning, then you enjoin what is good. You know, if people are being real hostile to you after that step, the third is, and avoid ignorant people. Like, stay away from them, right? So, there's a saying of Imam Ali, Karamullahu Wajah, that says that do not debate an ahmaq, like a loudmouth ignoramus, right? He says, because if you do, people may make a mistake differentiating between the two of you, right? So if they see one person being ignorant, they know for sure that they're ignorant. They say, oh, he might be ignorant too, or she. But if they see you arguing back and forth, oh, well, both of them, he's an ahmaq, and he's an ahmaq. Like, both of them are ignorant. So, like, don't let yourself be defeated by ignorant people. But in saying that, with the broader American society, many people in our society, rightly or wrongly, see this country as a nation of immigrants and as a beacon of hope that has allowed refugees and people in need from all over the world to come here for safe haven and to try to make a better life for themselves. This is a stated American value, even though it hasn't been fully implemented for people equally since 1776 or even before, when Native Americans were ethnically cleansed and African Americans, millions were brought here in chains against our will. This is Black History Month, I gotta mention that, right? But nonetheless, this is like a stated or believed American value. So it's one thing that people try to target or say something about Muslims. When you start talking about values and ideas and what the Constitution's supposed to be about, then if someone is against the Establishment Clause, if they're against the First Amendment and freedom of religion, or then this is basically, I think most Americans can agree or have some respect for this principle. And this is why I think even some people who are neocons or Bushies are disagreeing with Trump right now, because what he is doing is really undermining the very basis of the American Constitution, really. So that's my advice about, and generally, like how I would frame it. A second talking point may be that, very simply put, that there has not been a single Syrian or Iraqi refugee since the illegal invasion of Iraq that's committed an act of violent extremism against the homeland. There's not been a single Iraqi or a single Syrian Muslim that has killed an American that's come over here and done anything. All these, they say, oh, well, Daesh is a part of the Syrian refugees. These refugees are in refugee camps languishing. They go through about a two-year process, background check, checked by Interpol, checked by our intelligence, our the FBI's, our mukhabarat, right? They go through all of this background before they're even able to get into this country. They go through rigorous process, right? And then, even still, as I mentioned this when Governor Snyder wanted to ban Syrian refugees, we were involved in the TPS and Asylum Project. And there was a plan here to welcome 400 Syrian orphans, like people, Muslim organizations working with Lutheran Family Services and others, right? So, like, I posed the question, what harm does a 9-year-old Syrian boy pose to national security? Just because his name is Muhammad? A 12-year-old Syrian girl, you know, because her name is Kulthum or her name is Zahra, like, what threat does that girl or that boy pose national security? We talk about it like on a human level like that. Like, I think that most people with a heart can say, well, no, that doesn't make any... I was on Flashpoint earlier this week, and this guy who's a Republican, hardcore conservative, when I raise this point about the kids and the orphans, even he says, well, that doesn't, you know, I don't think they should be part of it. That doesn't sound right to me. This is like a Bush guy when I brought this point up, even he's like, you know, I don't think elderly and women and orphans should be banned like that. So, like, appealing to American values, quote-unquote American values, and people's humanity, I think this is a good way to discuss the issue that's going on right now. But just knowing, too, as things may look bleak, there are millions and millions of Americans who are not Muslims who are empathizing with us right now. There are a lot of good people out here. They've been given some wrong information about Muslims and Islam, but they don't have malice or malicious intentions towards Muslims. They've been given false information. That's where we come in. We need to engage people, right? So don't despair.